You're listening to Advocate Radio. This is the Lake Highlands podcast for November 8th, 2011. I'm Carrie Mitchell, an editor at Advocate Magazines, and with me today are our regular podcasters, Ellen Raff. Good to have you back, Ellen.
Thanks, Carrie. It's great to be here.
And Carol Toller. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Hi. Hello. Glad to be here.
We're going to talk about a few things today. We're going to start with a post that Carol wrote on Prop 6 and the PTA position on this election. Tell us a little bit about what's going on, Carol.
Well, the RISD Council of PTAs is kind of the umbrella organization that supports all the PTAs for Richardson ISD, and they are encouraging all their member organizations and all the participants in PTA and all the parents in the neighborhood to vote against Prop 6. Basically, they are afraid that money taken from the permanent school fund to create a temporary fix for school funding problems will just push the problem farther into the future, and that it will disincentivize the legislature from solving the grander problem of school funding for the long haul. And I agree with them. I think, you know, if you can pull money out of this pot and fix that for now, why would you feel a need to make the hard choices to solve the problem for the long haul? And I think that it's just some hard decisions that need to be made around some conference tables in Austin to solve the school finance problem. And the PTA, I think there's some very bright PTA moms in Richardson that are working around it, and some very bright PTA moms in Austin, and dads that have worked on it as well. And a lot of people in Texas have had varied positions on it. The Lufkin newspaper called it a shell game of kind of trying to move money around. There are three parts to the proposal. One has to do with naming issues, which is the permanent school fund has a lot of different names, and they want to make sure it's called all the same thing. That's uncontested. Everybody agrees with that. But the two things that are people have disagreement about are the distribution of revenue from the permanent school fund into the daily runnings of the schools, and that is kind of a cop-out. You know, we need to run our daily business of schools from our daily collections of taxes. And then the other thing is kind of where the shell game, I think, comes into play is asset valuation. And that's an accounting change of valuing assets differently and saying something's worth more today than it was yesterday, so that we can, the Texas Constitution limits the amount that we can transfer from the permanent school to the school fund to the available school fund. And so if we say it's worth more, then the percentage we can give from one fund to another fund is worth more.
So it's worth $200, not $100, so we can actually give more money to.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's an accounting game.
Sure. Permanent school fund. I've not covered education specifically in a while. That actually used to be my beat when I was doing daily newspapers years ago. But it's called the permanent school fund because it was set up to fund schools. Do we know this? I don't know.
You know, it's supposed to be an endowment fund,
okay.
And it's supposed to
be kind of like a scholarship, like where you put money into it and accrues money over years,
and the earnings from that are used in the available school fund, the amount that's used to run schools.
Okay.
But the permanent money or the
so we're
the seed
to
money
dipping
is not
into the seed money.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
And again, these accounting games allow us to do that. So if we say that the seed money's worth more, then we can pull more of a percentage out today than we could have yesterday. And it's also a matter of saying certain revenues that if you change the Constitution, the Texas Constitution, to say certain revenues that were supposed to go into the permanent fund now can go into the available fund, then that means we can use it today for daily uses, whereas yesterday we could, they had to go back into the seed money. So, you know, accounting changes.
I have a kind of a strange question about this. Does anyone know what Rick Perry would do?
You know, I think Rick Perry, because he wants to be president, wants to cut and as much money as he can, which he has done, and avoid tax increases as much as he possibly can.
So he would say, yes.
He would say, but I'm not Mr. Perry, but I would say, I think he's gone on record as saying, tap every dollar that we can tap to keep us from having to raise taxes.
Yeah.
And cut every dollar that we can so that he will look presidential. That's my opinion.
Well, okay. I mean, I just want to
And I think that panders to his base, which wants to keep taxes low.
And whether or not we support Rick Perry personally, I just want to say that riding on the school buses with the band, as I have been doing, and appreciating the fact that our public schools basically must be supporting that function of bands traveling, except perhaps in Carrollton, where I think they stopped doing that, that bands don't go to the away games. And maybe that's just a, you know, sort of a, just one example of something that I think it's really great that we do in Texas, that we have, that we support public schools. So I just hope that, as you're saying, we can work on a long-term fix for some of the more fun things that schools do. Not only fun, but, you know, mind-enhancing and, I don't know, traditional and civilization and supporting.
I wonder if we're ever going to get to a day where we're not going to be talking about funding schools in Texas. I moved to this state, this great state of Texas, 9 years ago, and when I got here, there was and I realize 9 years is not that long, but when I got here, the big conversation was, how are we going to fund schools? And you heard the terms unfunded mandates. You know, there's all these rules about how things have to go in the schools, but there's no funding to back up those mandates was one of the arguments. Are other states having these problems?
Oh, sure they are. Sure they are. But I guess it's not, you know, I think it's just a question of, we need to look at our details and you know, assess, is it really, what kind of, for example, I can remember back, you know, all my life in whatever school or state I lived in, right, there's a question of that. So this is something that we always grapple with. But, you know, when we're in a position right now of today where it's getting to where there's cutting and cutting and cutting just year after year. Maybe, you know, it's time to really consider. I don't see why we should need to be in a manufactured crisis. That's all I mean to say.
Well, this could get confusing too in the terms of, okay, so you've got these different funds and they have different functions and they both have different functions and they function differently. We spent an entire legislative session hearing the term rainy day fund and legislators wanting to dip into that fund because of, you know, their shortages. And then, of course, now you've got this other fund. And I do understand where the PTAs are coming from in the sense of, you know, we've got to figure out how to fund schools.
I think if a legislator or a governor proposed some of this dipping into funds as a temporary fix, it might receive a more favorable reaction, but no one's saying that. And I think, in fact, it's not so much dipping into the funds temporarily that's the problem. It's the fear that it will become a long-term track that you can't turn that ship around. And that will just be, and that the money, the general revenue will be spent on other things, and that can't be turned around. So that general revenue will not go to schools, and then you never can get it to go to schools, and then schools are just always underfunded, and it will stay that way. I had a friend in college who went to work for a big bank in New York City, and every month, by the end of the month, she ran out of money for groceries. So she would take her parents' Bloomingdale's credit card and go shop in the gourmet groceries section of Bloomingdale's for groceries. Well, that's using, you know, money from the wrong pot to buy groceries. And long term, she finally had to pay for that. And that's, you know, she ate well, but she was using the wrong money for the wrong purposes. And at some point in time, you have to pay for that.
There you go.
Another analogy, just quickly, is to say that Richardson ISD, one reason that we are in better shape than a lot of the others is because they do have a fund that that earns interest and that can pay back bonds when we have a bond issue. So we have this cushion of, you know, the district doesn't rate it. They just have it there as a cushion so that when they need improvements, they can issue bonds and not raise taxes. It sounds to me like this is something the same, that there's a fund for Texas schools that is there for the purpose of generating revenue.
Well, and I think Richardson ISD continues to be able to earn a lot of taxes, and I think they've also been smart in the way they've spent it, and they've been smart in keeping expenses down and cutting where they can. And I think there are some other districts that just don't have the earning power that we've had, and that makes it harder for them. And so they rely on state funding even
exactly.
more than we do.
Exactly.
Carol, when is the election?
It is today, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday, November 8th, today.
And is that the kind of thing you would vote at your normal
yes.
polling places?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Jumping into an entirely different topic altogether, there has been the issue come up recently of complete streets all around Dallas, but also in Lake Highlands. There's actually Complete Streets Open House and Workshop. It's next Tuesday, November 15th at the Freshman Center from 5:30 to 8. We'll post something on the blog about this as well. But essentially, it's going to be a workshop where everyone can go in and kind of give their two cents about what they think complete streets should be. In Lake Highlands, the ones that are being looked at is, it's Park Lane, looks like between Greenville and Abrams, Skillman, I think between Northwest Highway and Walnut Hill, and then North Cliff is another one that's kind of an old Lake Highlands. It's between, roughly between Buckner and Easton. And the way this was described to me is how it's going to work is basically you're going to come in to this workshop and you can break up into groups according to what street you care about in particular. And then it's kind of like craft time. I've seen this happen. It's hilarious. I've been at Gateway workshops in other parts of the city where they kind of give you stickers and I know that sounds silly, but I mean, they're, you know, intentional stickers. You know, I've been at Gateway workshops that have, they're talking about high-rise zoning and, you know, residential, and they'll have, you know, little pictures of houses or, you know, pictures of high-rise skyscrapers. Different kind of thing, but they may give you bicycles or they may give you pedestrian, you know, moms with strollers and stuff like that, and you can go, I think we need this here, and I think we need this here. And it's kind of a way, I think what it ends up being is a way for the city to kind of take into account what people are looking for in a really visual, tangible way, other than, you know, whoever talks the longest and the loudest
right.
gets to have their voice heard and everybody else is just, you know, going to be SOL. So that's kind of how the workshop works. Now, complete streets, what is a complete street? Rick wrote about this a little bit on the blog, I guess it was a week or so ago, and talked about, you know, are you willing to give up some of your street for it to be a complete street? The assumption around the city is that a complete street means somehow incorporating cyclists, pedestrians, maybe bicycle lanes, more sidewalks, whatever. As I was talking to Becky Range at the Lake Highlands PID, Public Improvement District, about this a little bit, she noted that, you know, that's not necessarily what it means for every street. There's almost kind of this idea that a complete street is this street kind of living into its fullness in a way. Like, is this all the street can be for what it needs to be for this particular area? So that's an interesting concept beyond just, are we going to add a bicycle lane or are we going to add a better sidewalk to a street? In some cases, it may mean another turn lane. In some cases, it may mean much wider medians or, you know, something like that. I don't know. It just kind of depends on the street. So that's going to be part of the discussion too. So this is not just the kind of thing you're wanting to be involved with if you're a cyclist or a pedestrian or maybe like some of the commenters on our blog post who don't like the cyclists and the pedestrians. Ellen, you had some interesting thoughts about those, I guess.
Well, it was just hilarious because I saw the post by Rick, and it was, you know, basically just laying out the concept of, you know, hey, this is really interesting. 85% of people in Dallas, apparently, according to the Dallas Morning News, would be willing to give up some of their street for whether it be a sidewalk or a bicycle lane. And I looked at the graph, and only 13% of those people surveyed said, you know, they wouldn't under any circumstances. And so that was the issue. The responses from Lake Highlands people were like just completely personal and about their, like, practically the street in front of their house. Why are women walking with strollers out inside there when cars might be needing to get by? And it just was very, I mean, there were like 8 comments and there were responses to that. Well, you know, what's the matter with you? How come you can't slow down for a woman in a stroller? Well, they shouldn't be out there. and then there were all of these little likes, you know, like somebody else was following it and really agreed that the women should not be out there in the street in strollers.
And that could be a whole other podcast topic.
Well, women in strollers. Okay, but, you know, and what's missing, no woman who with a stroller really responded, but other people like bike riders and runners. The runners responded, I can't run on those sidewalks. Those sidewalks are terrible. There's cracks and, you know, you'll trip and there's...
And that's one of the issues here is that, I mean, I think honestly people, okay, I can say from my own experience, and I wrote about this on the Lake Highlands blog a few years ago, but I used to get, you know, cars honking at me and... Worse when a friend of mine and I walked with a jogging stroller in the White Rock Valley area. And the problem is that the sidewalks, you know, they either stop in the middle of the street or they're really craggy and rocky. Mm-hmm. And you can't even get jogging strollers in some of those places. And here's the other problem. If you want the sidewalks fixed, well, the person who owns that home is responsible for those sidewalks.
Exactly.
The city does not pay to fix sidewalks. So basically what the city is coming in and saying, well, maybe that I'm putting words in the city's mouth here, is, you know, we're not going to fix your sidewalk, but maybe we'll give you part of a street and then you can walk there, I don't know, or cycle there. And of course there's a long-standing debate on whether it's safer to have cyclists have their own dedicated lanes or whether it's safer for them to be just in the lanes, in the main lanes with all the drivers. I don't know where I fall on that necessarily because I'm not a cyclist, but there's a lot of stuff going on here.
What really
struck
me, though, with these comments, because the one person wrote, well, I'm a jogger and I can't jog on the sidewalks because it just doesn't work, just like what you were saying as far as the strollers. Mm-hmm. And then the person that commented did that said, well, I'm a bicycle rider, and he was very sarcastic. Don't you know that you can't possibly expect anyone in a car to have any compassion for anybody else besides a person in a car? But he kind of ended it with, well, I'm a bicycle rider, so you guys all hate me. And it's like, okay, if that's the way we feel, it's like, okay, I'm a bicycle rider, and I don't have any friends, and I'm a jogger, and I don't have any friends, and I'm riding in a car, and I hate everybody else. And so... I would just make a plea for, you know, this is our community, and I think you probably maybe know some of those people, you know, wave at them.
Yeah.
Can't we all just get along?
Well, and I think that that's part of what this is doing, is trying to say, okay, we've got all these different people who are wanting to use the streets for different things in different ways. How can we maybe make it work for everybody? Is kind of the idea, I think, behind a complete street.
Well, would it be carving a new lane, like you mentioned, Skillman between Northwest Highway and Walnut Hill? You're talking about a major thoroughfare.
Exactly.
You know, you're talking about a major way that some people get to work in downtown Dallas. Are you talking about carving a new lane, or are you talking about taking away one of the 3 lanes of traffic and calling that now a bike lane, I wonder? Because, you know, gosh, it's certain times of the day, that would be kind of disastrous.
And it would be disastrous and tough. I mean, recently the construction on Skillman, I mean, it was right near your house, wasn't it, Carol?
Yeah.
I mean, I really missed that 3rd lane.
Oh, yeah.
It got a lot harder to get through.
And, you know, talk about people getting mean. you start talking about some construction and people just get downright mean. And the, you know, there's certain times of day when people are trying to go to work, that rush hour time is also primo bicycling and jogging time. So you're kind of putting two people together all at the same time. Now, if you're carving out a special and adding a special biking, jogging lane, that would make sense, but I'm trying to figure out how that would work over the bridges. There's several bridges on that stretch of Skillman, over, you know, over that White Rock Trail, and over several spots, over some creeks. So, gosh, it's expensive to build a bridge. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know in Austin when I visit my sister, they have, of course, they treat their cyclists and joggers better in Austin. But, you know, they're all kind of crazy in Austin. But they have some dedicated lanes. But, you know, I'm not sure it works very well because they'll let the people park in those lanes. And so you'll have a bicyclist driving along in his dedicated lane, and then he finds a parked car. So he's got to jut out into the lane of traffic and then go back. And it's kind of, I'm not sure that even works. So
yeah, it'll be interesting. I think that's part of my hope, my guess, is that at this meeting next week, they'll kind of overview what they're looking for, what they're thinking about, maybe what the possibilities are. I don't know that, I mean, there obviously are logistics already in place and limits on what we can do. I mean, we can't stick a trolley in the middle of Skillman, as far as I know, right now. I mean, please, maybe I'm totally wrong. We're going to stick a trolley in the middle of Skillman. Wouldn't that be great?
Isn't there a trolley workshop?
Yeah, try maybe. And, you know, who knows? Maybe, I don't remember what the streets are in other parts of the city, but there are other places in Dallas where I think they really need to add a trolley. Henderson Avenue, for example. Mm-hmm. Just so hard to get park anywhere there. You know, there are just places like that that I wonder if that will be part of the conversation, but I do think that this conversation is one that's not. I hope it doesn't end up being just a pedestrian versus cyclist versus automobile conversation versus mommies and strollers. I guess there's a fourth component there.
Let me ask one last question.
Yeah.
Why would you do this on surface roads like Skillman and Park Lane and Northwest
mm-hmm.
Highway
mm-hmm.
when you have this wonderful network of trails? Basically all in all the same spots.
Ellen, she has her hand raised. No one can see this.
Because when you only see cars on roads like that, it creates this sort of unfriendly no man's land where you have the feeling that there's nobody around. When you see people out, that gives a community feeling in a city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you try to separate them too much, it's what you have is this bifurcated thing where nobody understands each other's needs, but you have what we have now.
I also think too that some of the places that this is, I was even looking specifically thinking about Park Lane between Greenville and Abrams. That's not a thoroughfare that I am on very often because I'm neither visiting the Equestrian Center nor do I live in any of the apartments that are right around there, but I see a lot of people just walking on the street, and there aren't any sidewalks there, and it's got to be unsafe. I see the same thing. I'm on Skillman a lot, and I see people walking along that thoroughfare just on the side of the road, young children, too, quite often. And so maybe part of this question is, how do we create space for people who are already here? And,
right. Well,
you
see,
know,
those, and another answer to Carol's question is that even though we've got some bike trails, they mm-hmm. don't really address everything that where people really need to have transportation issues.
Yeah,
it has
to do with transportation.
Yeah.
And these are all addressing, you know, there's a Park Lane station at, I think, Park and Greenville, roughly. You've got the new Lake Highlands station. This goes right up to where they're looking at. It goes up to the town center land. So there's probably going to be, you know, Christians.
You're kind of talking about kind of through Vickery Meadows and kind of through that.
Yeah, exactly. Can I use a bicycle or can I get up even just in pedestrian ways, get to that DART station more easily? I don't know. That has to be part of it. You know, Northcliff 2 comes off of White Rock Lake. So there, is there a, you know, I don't know exactly what they're looking at there. But I think it will be interesting. I think what's going to be interesting about this workshop is finding out why these streets, what are we talking about here, and then what are we talking about doing with them? Are we talking about exactly what you asked? Are we talking about taking a lane of traffic and putting another bike lane in? Are we talking about adding it on the other side? Some drawings I've seen of bike lanes in Dallas, or I think there's only one that I've seen, and it's in Oak Cliff near the Bishop Arts District. But you've almost got this kind of smaller median separating the lanes of cars from the bike lane as kind of a buffer for both.
And almost like a speed bump.
Yeah. So that, and maybe even some trees or whatever if there's room. I don't know if there would be room in that kind of median. But so that there is literally a place for cyclists to just go through and not have to worry about getting hit by a car. And there's places for cars to go through and don't have to worry about hitting a cyclist. I think, you know, when I'm in a car, it stresses me out, not because I'm mad at the cyclists who are on the streets, but I don't want to hurt them, yet I'm obviously going faster than they are, especially on these major thoroughfares. So I would feel better if they had their own place to kind of cycle, so that, you know, that would take stress off me. And my husband's almost been killed by cars on a bike a few times, so I know that's got to be just crazy stressful when you're cycling through a city. Yet sometimes that's the only way to go. It's the easiest way to go. It's the fastest way to go. And you think, I should be able to do this, but you can't. So,
but if we are building wonderful bike trails and jogging trails and spending money on that,
right,
because it's more expensive to lay that concrete than you think it is, then are we cannibalizing that by building some surface, by cutting into our road, you know, our streets, our streets for cars, and cannibalizing our trails for that? So
that's a great question. I do think it's a really great question. And
I'm sure they have an answer. We just need to go to the meeting and find out what it is.
Exactly. Well, hopefully they have an answer.
There you go.
You know, who knows? Well, and this is a little bit further. This next topic is a little bit further north on Skelman, but there are some things from what we hear going on with the LBJ and Skelman Gateway. That gateway, that's kind of a funny word. It's being thrown around a lot of places in Dallas right now. There's the, you know, Garland Road corridor, and then that gateway to downtown. There's an Oak Cliff gateway that's supposed to be right there at the Trinity River going into downtown. The idea, I think, is that this is a major intersection with a lot of different things going on, and it's an entrance point for a lot of people coming into Lake Highlands. But it's, as we all know, a complete disaster. The Bermuda Triangle, I think it's often referred to, accidents there are quite common. It's a scary, it's the kind of place if you have a teenager, you don't want them to ever drive on, because it's just scary. And we've done stories on real estate too, commercial real estate in that area, and have had, real estate experts essentially tell us that until that intersection is addressed, that there's not going to be any retail revitalization in that area, because it's just too much of a nightmare for people to get around there, so they're not going to stop. I mean, you can pretty much only go one direction, and then you have to completely turn around and come back, so it's just not happening. But there has been some visioning in the past to kind of address that intersection, and there's it kind of slowed down with the economy, as many things did. There's a lot of money still needed to kind of rework it, but that even has some implications. I think, Ellen, you were talking about the DART station that's there that you can drive by and not even know it's
right
there.
Well, I mean, I know there is a DART station there, and I remember when it opened up but there was retail and, you know, kind of a big sort of a grand opening about it. But unless you ride DART, now my husband did, he used to take the train downtown and then come back into Lake Highlands, and he started using that line. And
the station you're talking about is technically called, it's actually, I think, called Miller or Royal, but it's kind of really between Miller and Skelman on the outside of LBJ, or on the north side of LBJ. But
so where can you see it from the street?
More on the Royal / Miller side.
Okay.
Kind of behind the old Mother Mesquite's, which is closed.
So it's a little beyond Skelman then.
It really is.
Okay. Okay.
You could throw a rock and hit it from Skillman, but you can't access the train from Skillman.
Okay. Well, the reason I bring it up is that, you know, again, this is something that should be a sort of well known to us, and it's part of the area there, and trains go through, and people go through it every day, but it's something that, unless you ride the train, you barely even are aware of it, and I think as part of the Gateway Project, they want to kind of incorporate more of this, what we were
flow,
talking about.
Flow, I guess.
Flow, I mean, you know, symbiotic mm-hmm. relationship between the station and the retail in the area and other traffic. What you were just saying, I mean, if you're in a car, basically you're congratulating yourself to get through there and not get lost. But if you were trying to walk or be on a bike there, you wouldn't do it, basically.
And that's an stretch that has what you were talking about, Carrie, kind of a little speed bump protection for walking because it is so
mm-hmm.
dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and there's quite a bit of median space in there. I was driving by the other day and just kind of thought there is some space in here to kind of work with. It's just a matter, I think what's happening right now with the LBJ Gateway is it's just kind of in the design. There's been some grants from the North Texas Council of Governments and those kinds of things for studies of land use and those kinds of things. What can we do here is kind of where it is.
But the good news is no one's rushing into anything because they want to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
But the bad news is every year that they wait, it's worse and worse. Because speaking of mother mesquites and all the stuff that used to be over there, and part of that is a crime issue and an economy issue and all that, but what did we have over there? We had Picasso's, we had Dickies, we had Chili's. You know, we had some great businesses over there that are all gone. And it's pretty rough now. And so, the whole intersection and the whole area kind of disintegrates as we wait and wait and wait. So we need some big thinkers.
Well, here's hoping.
Here's hoping.
Well, thanks for listening to the Lake Highlands podcast. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with more on who knows what. We'll find out.